9:30?
Yep.
Okay, we'll call this meeting to order for Wednesday, May 3rd. We have a quorum, so we'll move down to recognitions and proclamations. So, employee recognitions. And we have Richard Sherlock with 5 years, Maria Elisosa. How do you pronounce it?
Eliosa?
Yes.
Eliosa.
I'm not very good with Spanish. Apologize. Derek Etheridge with 10 years and Jamie Russell with 25 years.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow.
So. Yay. Come forward, we'll present you with the pins and plaques and get a picture taken.
It's pretty easy.
Photo ops. Wow, Jamie.
Derek, could you move a little bit closer to Jamie? Jamie, can you move closer to Terry?
Here, I don't know. Stand behind you.
Okay. Richard, can you scoot over to Terry a little bit there? All right. That's great, guys. Big smiles. Thank you. Congratulations. Yeah.
Yay.
While Commissioner Thompson is returning to his chair, I'd like to note, I believe this is the first time we've had all recipients of this recognition able to attend, so thank you for that effort.
So item B, new hires. Bridget, you want to tell us who's all here?
Come on forward, guys.
Step forward, looks like it. So, you know, if you get to stay here long enough years, you get this kind of group every time. We don't pack it quite this.
Luckily, we have a smaller tour today. We only have 3 new hires, but I'll let them introduce themselves and tell you their positions.
I'm Maria with the Week Office.
I'm Jolene with TV Services.
I'm Brian Balk with the Surveyor's Office.
Well, welcome to Lincoln County.
Welcome.
Back and see us again.
For a pin.
Proclamation, resolution proclaiming May 2017 as Mental Health Awareness Month for Lincoln County. Cheryl?
Okay. Barbara?
You want to read the proclamation?
I would be honored, Mr. Chair. Whereas mental health is essential to everyone's overall health and well-being, and whereas all Americans experience times of difficulty and stress in their lives, and whereas mental illnesses are real and prevalent in the United States, and whereas 1 in 5 adults experiences mental health problems in any given year, and such problems can contribute to the onset of a serious mental illness, such as major depression, bipolar disorder, or schizophrenia, and whereas 1/2 of those with a serious mental illness begin showing symptoms by the age of 14, and 3/4 by age 24, and life expectancy among those with serious mental illnesses is 10 years less than those without this illness, and whereas suicide is the 10th leading cause of death in the United States, and 90% of those who die by suicide have an underlying mental illness, and whereas in Lincoln County, suicide is the 7th leading cause of death for adults, and nearly 21% of 8th graders and 18% of 11th graders have considered suicide. And whereas, with early detection and effective supportive treatment, individuals with mental illness can have recovery and lead full, productive lives. And whereas, public education and community support activities can encourage emotional and mental health and help improve the lives of individuals and families affected by mental illness. And whereas prevention and early intervention, including mental health first aid, are effective ways to reduce the incidence of mental illnesses and suicide. And whereas the U.S. Surgeon General's National Prevention Strategy has recognized mental and emotional well-being as essential for all Americans, with a plan for action that all Americans can use to better handle challenges and protect their mental health. Now, therefore, we, the Lincoln County Board of Commissioners, also acting as the local mental health authority, do hereby proclaim the month of May 2017 as Mental Health Awareness Month in Lincoln County. We also call upon all Lincoln County residents, government agencies, faith communities, businesses, schools, and other public and private entities to increase awareness and understanding of mental health, suicide prevention, and the Stepping Up Initiative, to learn the steps that everyone can take to protect their and their loved ones' mental health, and to get involved in the community resource of Mental Health First Aid.
Thank you. Thank you, Commissioner. Again, love that radio voice for reading these proclamations. Good morning. I'm Cheryl Connell, Director of Lincoln County Health and Human Services. I'd also like to introduce Barbara Turtle, Health and Human Services Behavioral Health Division Director. And as you can probably tell, I wanted to be able to recognize as many of my staff that work in this important field today as part of this proclamation. Thank you for declaring May as Mental Health Awareness Month in Lincoln County. Each year, I take this opportunity to recognize the Health and Human Services staff that work within and for our behavioral health system of services. They range from front office reception staff, counselors, therapists, registered nurses, psychiatric nurse practitioners, peer support specialists, client case managers, care and service coordinators, financial counselors, and billing staff and mental health first aid instructors. They all work together in a compassionate, patient-focused manner, guided by the individual and their family, and in concert with our two advisory committees and other community partners to promote recovery with the individual. So I wanted to just be able to have everyone who works for our behavioral health system of services stand up.
If you're not already standing.
You're back here. So these individuals are the faces for Lincoln County providing those essential behavioral health services in the community, in clinics, in hospital emergency rooms, all over the county and sometimes outside of the county. So I think it's really important to be able to see that this community is what provides most of the services in Lincoln County, the geographic area, and all of Lincoln County for our agency. So I just wanted to say thank you very much. And this isn't everybody. This is most of it. So I just wanted it to really represent the important work and the number of people that it takes to help support this mission of mental health and Mental Health Awareness Month in our county. So thank you all.
Thank you.
It is also important to recognize the essential work of other HHS and county staff in the promotion, prevention, early intervention, and treatment. Most of this work centers around the prevention of adverse childhood experiences, which are known to increase the risk of developing mental illness, addiction, and other health conditions in adulthood. Our public health, family and child nurse visiting, and parents as teachers programs, the jail parenting education program, all do this important work. The Community Corrections Domestic Violence Probation Officer does important work in early intervention, as does the work of the DA and the Children's Advocacy Center. Our health promotion staff does community education and mental health first aid. Our jail inmate counselor also provides essential services for those individuals in the jail with mental illness. All of this work is critical to help prevent the conditions that increase the risk of developing mental illness. The Surgeon General recently issued a report recognizing that mental and emotional well-being is essential to overall health. And I quote, "Positive mental health allows people to realize their full potential, cope with the stresses of their life, work productively, and make meaningful contributions to their communities. Early childhood experiences have lasting, measurable consequences later in life. Therefore, fostering emotional well-being from the earliest stages of life helps build a foundation for overall health and well-being." This May, please take time to read the Surgeon General's report and find out what you can do, everyone, to be able to promote mental and emotional well-being. So now I would like to have Barbara take it away for a few comments.
I guess there isn't too much I can add to what Cheryl said. I can talk about more day-to-day kinds of things. The Child and Family Program has two to three specific programs that they're actively working on. ESA, which is spelled E-A-S-A, and that addresses the early psychosis of individuals who, from the ages of 13, 14, somewhere in that neighborhood, to up to 25, 26, 27. That's a program that's just newly in development. There's also the Parent-Child Interaction Therapy Program, called affectionately called PCIT, and that works with young children and their parents. It's a very innovative type of therapy. We've been doing that for about a year, a little over. There's also the wraparound system, which provides a lot of community supports, including family and anybody supporting the family as well as the child. That has a lot of community participation in it. The adult program has sort of similar types of programs, only in the adult setting. So there's the ACT program, which provides wraparound services for adults. We have a DBT program, which DBT stands for Dialectical Behavioral Therapy. It's a little hard to say at this hour in the morning, but I got it all out. And that's both serving kids, adolescents, and adults and their parents. So we've had that program for a number of years. We're one of the earliest DBT programs that works to fidelity in the state, which is really an achievement for our county. We've recently purchased in January a crisis respite house. We're moving forward with looking at the remodel for that. That will serve folks who are coming out of the hospital after a crisis. Not the highest risk folks, so there are folks who, generally speaking, are more moderate in terms of mental illness. We do have a 24/7 crisis team. We're working on expanding that. The Developmental Disabilities Program serves folks who have both both developmental disabilities and mental health, and we work very actively together. And behavioral health also very actively works with primary care as well as public health on integrating our services. That's a big challenge because primary care has one model of being and behavioral health has another, and so trying to make those two systems coordinate together takes a little bit of work and coordination. We have a lot of feet with community partners. We do work with the jail, we work with the hospital, we work with child welfare, drug rehabs, almost all the community agencies we're involved with one way or another. And it's a very, very hardworking group of folks, I have to say.
Mr. Chair. Well, I want to thank you both for a great presentation and for bringing so many members of your team here today. It's good that the public gets to see them and we get to see them and to say thank you. For anybody who doesn't get the link between mental health and physical health, I want to ask, is this statistic still true? One of the most shocking things I heard several years ago, that they say on average somebody with severe and persistent mental illness will die 25 years sooner than the general population.
It's more 10 years.
Okay.
So 10 years is kind of an average. I'm sure okay. There's folks who die younger, mm-hmm. and some who don't die at that point, mm-hmm. but 25 years is a little bit of an extreme.
Okay. Well, that was about 10 years ago that I heard that, so perhaps.
Well, good, we've made some progress.
Yeah, they were fine. Or maybe they were fine the day that we made some progress. But
I think the ACA has made a big difference because then folks got insurance coverage. So that's the biggest difference I can think of.
That would make sense. And then I'm glad you mentioned ACEs, adverse childhood experiences. Again, I wish people who aren't aware of that would learn something about it because, you know, the fact that a child who suffers multiple traumas, emotional traumas, am I capturing it correctly that essentially it rewires their brain functioning permanently in ways that are not good, not healthy?
It can certainly rewire neurological processes. Mm-hmm. I don't know if all of those are permanent. Mm-hmm. I think there's some statistics which show that you can reverse some of those things. But some of them may be, depending on what the degree of the abuse is and the trauma is.
Yeah. And then finally, one other question I'd like you to weigh in on, if I could, that as large as this group is, and knowing it's most but not all of the team, if we were really to be adequately resourced to meet the needs of this community, wouldn't this be a lot larger group?
About twice as big. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Thank you.
Question. My kids, who are now 33, 22, whatever, have accused me of being mentally ill more than once. But more seriously, how do you know? I mean, we all have mood swings. But what are some of the clues, or when might an individual say, gee, I think this is serious enough that I need some help? What are the clues?
Well, I would say if it interferes with your life to a point where you're unable to work, you're unable to enjoy the things that you normally enjoy, you notice your relationship is no longer there, things that are very important to you in your life are no longer important. Oftentimes some folks with a severe mental illness don't know. And so it's important to be able to give feedback and know how to give feedback to someone, especially a family member, if you're concerned about them.
So say, okay, I'm having issues and I say I think I need some help. What do I do? Who do I contact? Who do I call?
If you're trying to reach our program, our adult program, you would call one of the two adult clinics depending on where you live. So we have a Lincoln City Clinic and a Newport Clinic. Newport Clinic is called Lee Street. The Lincoln City Clinic is the Lincoln Community Health Center, which is co-located with primary care up in the north end of town. Lee Street is over opposite the jail where the mental health services are located. And you just call. You'd be screened by a screener and then scheduled for an assessment.
The other thing, too, that you can do is talk to your primary care provider. Primary care providers now are looking at, because they've been taught more about the importance of physical health and mental health, they're able to do some screenings to see if you are at risk or currently have symptoms of, say, anxiety, depression, those kinds of things. And there are some things that can happen at the primary care level to assist individuals that are having that kind of diagnoses. So that's one of the things I think that Barbara had mentioned about the integration with primary care and behavioral health being so important, so that there really can be that education that has happened among all providers about the symptoms, about how to screen for those symptoms, and then what is the most appropriate place for those individuals to get the care that they're needed. Some individuals can get the care that they need with their primary care provider. Some may need more expert services like what we offer at Health and Human Services, the specialty care. So, yeah.
And Commissioner Hunt, if you notice that your substance use is getting in the way or your problem gambling is an issue along with your mental illness.
You know me well.
Commissioner Hunt, you're a mess.
Now I've been accused of more than once.
I think we have enough people in the room. We might be able to.
So the county has...
I'll be calling later.
The county has problem gambling counseling for folks who are dealing with problem gambling as well as family members. That's a free service. The state that's paid for at a lottery dollars, and we also have a program that addresses both mental health and substance abuse.
You know, I think it's interesting, the dialogue that just kind of took place. I think that's a reflection of a more open attitude toward these type of issues. I think, you know, 10 or 15 years ago, to joke about some of these issues probably wouldn't have happened. But the fact that there's an acknowledgement that these issues are prevalent in our society and that there are ways to treat them, and it's not, you know, it doesn't have the social stigma that it had in the past or as much of one. So, again, good work. Thank you.
Yeah, that is a key term, and do you want to say anything more on that? Because that people maybe finally, even though I think hasn't it been 60 years that it's been officially recognized by the medical community that mental illness is not the result of a character defect, but is an illness.
Right,
truly.
I think it's still, the stigma's still there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the stigma applies both to the clients and to the providers. I mean, and you know, I've heard this discussed in national folks who are working in Washington, D.C. They feel the stigma when they're working in any area that deals with alcohol and drug or mental health. So I still think it's an issue.
So we're making some headway, but a lot of ways to go.
And again, it's community education, it's awareness, like what we're bringing today with this proclamation that, you know, can hopefully help turn that tide, that, you know, the stigma associated with having behavioral health diagnoses really shouldn't be any different than somebody who has heart disease or diabetes. It's a chronic condition. You can recover from it. You need help sometimes. But again, as it said in the proclamation, you can recover, and you may have times where you have relapses, like everybody does in physical health. But again, you can recover from that and still have a healthy, full, productive life. So that's really the message that we're trying to get out there to the community and those with mental illness.
Well, thank you very much, and your staff. Thank you for the work you do. It helps all of us to live a better life, whether you're a patient or somebody that comes in contact. It's a complex system, and it's a tough one. It takes a lot of people to and lick something like this. It sounds like we've made progress if Bill's numbers are right.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you much for the job you do.
Thank you. Thank
Have
you.
A good day.
Thank
all
you.
Right.
Thank you.
May 2017 as Mental Health Awareness Month in Lincoln County.
Yay. I'll second that.
All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
We move down to the consent calendar. Consent calendar items of routine nature or things we've previously heard. Is there anything you'd like to highlight or delete?
I'll move for approval of the consent calendar.
I'll second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion passes. No public hearings, no decision in action, so we go to discussion and information. Thompson Sanitary Uniform Rate Report and proposed rate adjustments for 7/1/17.
Commissioners, if I might, just to start off, this is our annual process of reviewing the rates on the uniform.
Enthusiastic.
Yes. Sorry, this is our annual process of reviewing rates under the Uniform Rate Reporting Format, which I was just looking to try and see. I think we've had this in place since about 2003. Does that sound right, guys? Yeah, it's been a long time that we've been doing this, and it's an opportunity to review the operations from our franchised solid waste haulers, and then look at any adjustments to rates that we do on an annual basis. It used to be years ago before we had this system, it would be very periodic and a little bit more disjointed in terms of our analysis of franchises and what the rates might be, but this has a process in place. It's worked very well for us. So I'm going to turn it over to the folks from Thompson Sanitary, and they're going to present a report to you.
Good morning. I thought all those people were going to see me, but I guess not. My name is Joe Cook. I represent Thompson Sanitary and mostly rape matters. Need my address. I'm not supposed to say that. No. So as you heard, this is our annual review. We go through all our numbers from the previous year, project the next year, look at you know, what changes we anticipate. The results of that are expressed as an operating ratio, and we have a range that we work within. And this year we're outside the range and are requesting a rate adjustment to bring us back just to the top of the range, or not even at the top of the range, to a break-even situation. I'll get into that a little bit, but major line items of that 11%, disposal increases were 2.2%, and the new equipment was at 1.8%. That leaves about 7.5% for general cost increases, as well as some fine-tuning of the allocation factors that we've been working on, such as time on route in each jurisdiction. And we do test periods of that, and a small percentage change can make a larger number change within the results. We are constantly working to fine-tune that, and I suspect someday we'll just have real-time GPS data on that, and I don't know when that will be. Hopefully I'll be retired. And Wayne touched on this a little bit, but you know, we've had this process in place when we first started, and it only was that long ago that we were reporting operating ratios in excess of 125%, which meant we were losing 25 cents on every dollar of revenue we brought in. And we feel that we're approaching a rate structure that will make each jurisdiction self-sufficient, and there won't be any cross pollination, so to speak, of the rates. Looking forward, we've worked hard to limit our risks. The one risk we see out there are recycling commodity prices. We know of a market in Portland that changed their pricing in April from paying $27 a ton to charging $37 a ton. So $64 change in 1 month. And so, yeah, as world events, and especially China, continue to impact the value of the materials that we collect and take to market, there's a significant risk to us and ratepayers on that. On the other hand, that's not the largest number that we have. Where we've entered into, our other waste streams have entered into agreements that, long-term agreements that have pricing built in over the term of the agreement for garbage and for mixed compostables. So that'll limit the risk to both the company and our customers as we move forward. If you want any history on the rate process we're going through, I'm glad to go over that. You know, basically in 2002, the county came to the franchise haulers asking for a rate review process and format, and I was involved in that with all the haulers, and this is kind of the point where I think we're right at the cusp of being able to be self-sufficient with it both.
I don't have any questions.
Well, I'd like some, I guess, clarification, or not clarification, but I think it's important for the public to understand when we talk about the operating ratio and the range, what is the range? I don't know, Commissioner or Council Belmont?
The goal is an 8%, basically.
8%
meaning? Above the operating expenses.
Yeah.
No,
that's not the number.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
The goal is 88%.
Not 8%. Sorry about that.
So that would be an operating ratio of 88 cents, or 88%, meaning that for every dollar of expense, you're incurring 12 cents of profit. To support operations, it's not necessarily profit.
Not mathematically accurate. I mean, it's pretty close. And it's pre-tax, so it's before we paid any tax.
Right. Yeah. Well, I guess what I'm concerned about, and again, I want the public to understand, you talk about being at the top of the range. Well, the top of the range does not mean the top of profitability. It means
right.
the bottom of profit.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah.
And we're not even at the end of the range where we're not making very much money. We're not making. We're projecting to break even
yeah.
this year.
Yeah. So this increase, well, percentage wise, is a little substantial. As I recall, it's a couple dollars, $2 to $3, depending on what type of service, in a general sense.
Yes, and you have those rates. It's here, Exhibit D, and yeah. the materials in here.
So, I think it's important for the public to understand. You talk about the top of the range, that's really the bottom of profit, not even profitability, it's the bottom of break even, if you will. Then the last question I have would, obviously Thompson's Sanitary is involved in a variety of activities, but we're not asking our ratepayers, our citizens, to support all of the activities that are outside of the trash collection, for lack of a better word, I guess. So how do you separate those costs that are not really a part of the trash collection activities of the company? Because, again, we don't want those costs included in the costs that we're talking about as far as the operating ratio.
We've set up very distinct companies and systems to assure that. So if there's the transfer station has its own costs and billings, there's some shared costs between the administrative side and the operations, both franchise and transfer, that are detailed, invoiced at market or below. And so we take great pains to make sure that that's all very clear and above board.
In some ways, it's a lot like within our own budget, where we allocate certain percentages of people's time in different departments. But again, I think it's important to note for the record that those costs are kept separate and
absolutely
accounted for outside of the activities relative to trash collection in the unincorporated areas of the county, which is what we're talking about.
Well, then within the franchise collection company, we have two jurisdictions, and those are allocated based on labor hours, average weights, and customer counts.
I guess the last point I'd make is, I think this is a good process, and it's also a process that all three of the haulers in the county go through. So,
and each of the cities has adopted the uniform rate reporting format, too, so it's actually across the entire county.
Yeah. Good point. All right. Thank you.
So I have a question. The facility, the transfer station itself, not the recycling station, that is owned by the city of Newport, or you own it outright?
I can speak to that.
Please.
So the transfer station property is city property, and we have a lease that is tied to the franchise contract with the city. So if anything were to change with the arrangement for the franchise, it would also impact that lease. And Chris Miner drafted that years ago. It's two 10-year contracts. We're in the second of that 10-year renewal. The transfer station is regulated by Oregon DEQ with the solid waste permit. It is also a 10-year permit, and it was actually just renewed at the end of 2016. It was satisfactorily renewed. Part of that permit is an operations plan. That plan provides resources to both the DEQ and the employees on what sort of activities they expect us to engage in and what not to engage in. Materials that we can accept, materials we cannot, how to deal with dust, litter, vector, noise, liquid. So all those things are in the operations plan. Julie Burnt is our liaison for that facility, and it's a separate company. It goes back to the allocation that Commissioner Hunt brought up, and Wayne working through the county. It's been 15 years now that we've been utilizing the uniform rate reporting format. And that was one of the reasons why that is separate, is so that those costs associated with
both recycling to the public, which that facility is responsible for recycling. We're obligated by Oregon to provide the opportunity to recycle. So those costs are really not, and nor should they be, a part of the costs to provide curbside collection. So that's another reason why they're separate, and why we have those allocators, the ability to keep those things separate so we can evaluate the rates on a day like today separate of those statewide requirements. Sorry, I probably made that longer.
No, let me ask you some questions here.
Identify yourself for the record.
Rob Thompson, Thompson Sanitary Service.
No relative.
Another good point.
I received some complaints over the last couple of years because of what Toledo's like, and I was in Astoria and I've seen different facilities, and that facility is getting, shall we say, run down. It's got some problems.
Yes.
And so this is, I'm trying to figure out where the money would come from if that facility was to be improved, and who would do it. And so, is it come from this? Would we change the rate? How would you go about making this adjustment?
Well, I'd like to answer the first part of that question, and Wayne, I'm going to tell you right now, I'm going to hand the second part off to you. But the first part, the transfer station where we reload both solid waste, mixed compostables, and commingle, that facility we built in roughly 1993. We maintain that. Actually, today, we have a new scale being installed in the ground. There's also a siding contractor at the scale shack, and they're redoing the fascia, putting new siding on the building. There's a door that was broken last year from a vandalism or a break-in. That door is going to be replaced as well on the pump house where we use for a washdown station. So we did a little bit of landscaping. There's a little bit of fence repair that still needs to be done. We've upgraded the railing to make it safer. So those are all things that we focus on a daily basis, and that's where we have our staff and focus most of our energy. The recycling center was built back when the McPhees were here using it as a bale fill. When Aga Beach Landfill was closed, it closed under a bale fill type of activity. That building was used to bale all of the county. And I need to footnote that, not the entire waste shed, but most of the waste in Lincoln County. There are a couple other landfills that were open at the time. They're all now closed. So that facility, Wayne, I'm going to hand it off really pretty quick here. We inherited that facility to operate a recycling center.
Yeah. So there is you've got the transfer station itself, which is basically a carved out area that includes, you physically you can see the transfer station, and there is an office space that you have up there too. And the first part as you first enter the landfill there is the part that's the transfer station. That actively takes garbage actually that comes through. There's both that which is hauled or picked up through your franchise, and then where you have a self dump there for the that's actually within the city. The city regulates that as part of their franchise, and that's also then permitted by DEQ, but dealt with through the city franchise. The remainder of the property up there at the old city landfill is actually leased to the Lincoln County Consortium for Solid Waste Management. And that is the group that was made up of the City of Newport, City of Lincoln City, Lincoln County, City of Sillett, City of Depot Bay, City of Toledo, that actually operated that particular facility when we did have, as Mr. Thompson said, a bale fill operation years ago. We shut that down under federal regulations in the early 1990s and then capped that particular site there. That site is not an active site. It does not take garbage. It operates under permits from DEQ that basically require for a minimum of 30 years. We're coming up on our 30 years at some point here, and we're going to see what the requirements are beyond that time. But that is a closed site. Actually, Mr. Kenyon and our public works people maintain the top cap to that particular site. We have a leachate collection system still there and connect on to the City of Newport treatment facility.
I understand that. It isn't a question. My question is, if we were wanted to improve that facility to the classes, maybe Astoria's or other dumps, how would we go about doing it Does it come through a rate adjustment?
And maybe it's what do you want to improve? If you want to improve the transfer station, that's a Thompson responsibility, and we'll work with the city on that, the actual active transfer station. The rest of the property, it would be something, and we actually are working on. We have been looking at, we know that Baylor Building is old, the current recycling area back there, and we've been looking at what it would, you know, what that, the cost of actually replacing that is pretty significant, and that's not a responsibility of the consortium to do that. You know, but they've been looking at that particular facility for a couple of years now and seeing what it is operationally. So it depends on whether you're talking about the recycling building or the transfer station itself.
Well, that's, I just know what I see in other communities, and I see what's there. I see a building that's running down. I see equipment that's running down. And we're basically in charge, or people think we're in charge, they don't realize that it's leased property from Newport. I'm trying to identify how to do it, and then where do we go if we want to improve the facility? Is it come in this, or what's the method? Because this is the subject that we're talking about, and if the public, if I'm hearing the public right, there are people that say, well, you know, we'd like to have a more updated system.
So the first mechanism for curbside collection of recyclables is, because Newport is a city over 4,000, we provide the same service in the city that we do for our county jurisdiction customers. So that's a mechanism of 4,000 population. The Opportunity to Recycle Act, because we have a solid waste transfer station permit, it's required that we provide that opportunity. I can tell you in Corvallis, at their business office, they provide a drop-off set of bins, and they serve some daily. That complies with that state law. I can't speak to what you've seen on the North Coast. I'm familiar with the Dulles facility. I can also share with you, in Grants Pass, they have an arrangement that's new. They have not started construction. They are actually, Wayne, utilizing what would be like solid waste district or closure fee dollars that were paid from the rates. So we collect fees, franchise fees, closure fees, solid waste district fees, to name a few. We forward those on either to the city or the county or to solid waste district, different parts of the budget. So we do collect fees to support those services and those mechanisms. And going back to Grants Pass, they've actually funded their account and don't have a specific use for those surplus dollars. So what they saw down there was a nonprofit recycling facility that used handicapped labor go out of business. So the county, I believe, is who they're partnering with, wants the garbage collection provider to duplicate that facility. So they're going to move it away from where it was. It was not in a very good spot, and they're actually going to, I think, receive about $800,000 to buy equipment that will process the material and get it ready to go to market. The building will be built on that garbage company's property. It's going to be their cost. So that is an example of a partnership between a local government and a private company, albeit regulated not only by the city and the state, but under the jurisdiction of the county. So it's reinventing the wheel. I apologize if that is not a great answer.
There's nothing wrong with the answer. Yeah. This is a complex problem, and yeah, we sit down outside of the meeting and talk about what is possible, because this is such a complex thing that I'm having trouble explaining to the average person that comes to talk to me what who owns what and how it all works.
And I can share with you as well, and I'm not throwing Wayne under the bus, but we've addressed this issue of the roof and the facility with Wayne.
With the recycling.
At the recycling.
That's different than the trash.
Right. Over the last couple of years.
Yeah, we've been looking it up.
And currently, I told you what we're doing at the transfer station in the way of improvements and spending money. We're currently building a 60 by 112 pole barn at our office where you would think of Thompson Sanitary proper, parking all of its trucks, etc. So we're building a building there for additional storage and just the growth of our business. Now, that's not to say that we're going to move our transfer station to that site, but certainly there's some efficiencies there to have all of these facilities, all of these public offerings that are required either by state law or 4,000 population all in one site. So, you know, we still have some years left on the lease. There's still some life left in the building. Is it as nice as other facilities in the state? Certainly not. But in the timing of things and the preparation to build and grow our current facilities on the current footprint, you know, we are aware of that, and we're looking at moving everything to a centralized location. And that would require, you know, a new permit on a new property location. And there's a process to go through for that as well. So,
just so you know, I'm kind of the maintenance guy around here in the county. Since I've been here, I've worked hard to try to develop, improve infrastructure. Mm-hmm. And since we're involved with you, I'm always interested in the conversation. All pieces of equipment wear out eventually.
Yeah.
And I think that within the next few years, we'll probably have a piece of equipment that the maintenance cost gets more than what it's worth, and maybe we can talk about this conversation in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I think tours are incredibly beneficial.
Yeah.
Laying your eyes on it for yourself is worth a billion words. So let's meet up and go out and take a look. We can walk around and, you know, we won't want to poke too hard on the walls or ceiling of that building because we'll probably poke a hole in it. But we can go see it, okay. And we can talk about solutions.
Thanks.
Yeah.
I might add that I chair the consortium board, which has representatives, as Council Belmont said earlier, from all of the jurisdictions, and I know this has been a topic of conversation.
Sure. And that's what I meant by, you know, certainly not throwing anybody under the bus. But
yeah, I'm not trying to throw anybody under the bus.
It's we're just investigating options, and we have some time, so we're not, you know, it's not a panic.
Right.
And, it could look nicer, but currently it's functioning.
Yeah. It's not being ignored.
Yeah, that's right. Thank you.
Something we'll talk about.
Yep, sounds good. Okay.
Thanks. Because it will affect rates.
Yes, it may. Yeah. Unless someone wants to build a building for it for free, it goes back to the commodity, you know, costing us now to get rid of it.
Right.
So there isn't like some, there's no money growing on a recycling tree, let's put it that way.
Crazy market.
Yeah.
Okay.
Markets.
So, Commissioner Zepta, you received the report. You do have the proposed new rates that would go into place using the uniform rate reporting format here. That's Exhibit D in your materials here. And what we normally do is move this forward to one of our next meetings. We're looking at getting these rates, if you approve them, in effect on July 1. So,
I'm comfortable with moving it ahead to a decision.
I support that.
Whenever the staff's ready.
Okay.
I'll move it ahead and talk in the future.
Great. Okay. Sounds good.
Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Contract for refinement of master plan for Lincoln County Commons facility and design for a main exhibit hall building and ancillary facilities.
Now, before Council Belmont gets started, I'd like to point out that the fairgrounds word is not in any part of this title, which is nice.
Trying to reflect the new direction that's been provided by the county, that this is the Lincoln County Commons, and it's the home of the Lincoln County Fair.
Thank you.
And so that it is reflected in here in terms of this particular agreement. If I might, the county went out for a request for proposals to really do some additional work that needs to be done to refine work that's been done already out at the fairgrounds to determine what that property should be utilized for, what the vision is for that property in redevelopment. And then specifically what had come out of our previous work there was the concept of one major facility being an exhibition facility, for lack of a better term. I'm sure that's going to be developed a little bit more in terms of the utilization, but basically a very utilitarian kind of building that would replace the existing exhibit hall that's at the Commons with a more modern and updated design. And all that was incorporated into this request for proposals. We received back a proposal that was being recommended to you that has four phases, basically, of services that would be provided to get us to the point where we can start utilizing funding that is made available to us through a couple of sources. One is that the board some years ago increased the transient room tax and dedicated that money for facilities improvements at this particular site. We've additionally provided some funding very recently to cover some of the operational costs that we anticipate for anything that's developed there. And then the third key component, of course, is that the city of Newport has included at least the building itself and possibly some ancillary development around there, including infrastructure for sewer, water, roads, other things that are going to have to be considered in the redevelopment of the property out there. They have some monies that are identified within the recently adopted Newport Urban Renewal, Northern Renewal Plan. So it's time to kind of pull all those things together and see what we can come up with as a both a plan and a strategy for moving this forward. What's being proposed here is, again, it's four phases. This agreement would only cover the first three phases. And the key components of these things are an incredibly, and I hate this term, but I'm going to use it anyway, robust public involvement process. The main contractor on this service, if you do this agreement, is Cogan Owens Green, which they are known for doing their public involvement processes. They do these quite extensively around the state of Oregon, and they have proposed to us a plan of public involvement that will really reach out to both stakeholders and the community at large to see what is it we want to do with this property, really refine what it is we want to do. We focused a lot in the initial process on the central building, but we've got a lot of other land around there and a lot of other things that we need to kind of decide what needs to be done, and this would really take care of that process. Second major component, this is something that I have to say that I've pushed extremely hard throughout this entire process, is we need to have a viable business plan for whatever we do. We have learned in the course of doing this that these facilities across the state do not pay for themselves. There's got to be some public involvement management of these, and the worst thing you can do is to develop a facility or plan and then not have the monies to operate it or plan to operate it. So that's an important second component of this overall plan. We'll examine what the resources are, what you can truly anticipate to develop or as revenue as well as other sources of covering operations, and give us operational models. It may not be that this, in fact, the likeliest this will not follow the traditional idea of a fairgrounds in which the fair board operates this thing. This is where we actually look at the fair becoming an event but not a manager, and really being a central tenant of this particular space in here, but that we look at other management options for the property as a whole and for times that are outside the realm of when a fair might be occurring here. And then all that's going to be brought together in both a strategic plan and then a master plan. And all those elements will come back to us that by the end of this particular process, we're going to have the roadmap for where we go from here. Phase four, which is not in this agreement, but which would move forward, we've also asked them to provide us with both a scope of services and some costs associated would be the actual design of the exhibition hall, placement on the property, amenities that would go along with that, through the actual construction documents, getting us ready to put that out for bid. The most important thing with that, from my perspective, is we're going to have to figure out the timing with the various funding sources that might come into play here, is when we will do that, what we can do with that. And it may be that we don't wait for certain things to happen. We go forward. We'll have the ability to go forward with this thing sooner rather than later. And that will be a separate agreement that we'll do. And we really want to get the results of the master plan, the refinement of the master plan, in place so we know what we're going to do, consensus of that is where we're going before we actually sit down for the details on that. But that's incorporated into the overall proposal, and we've got something we can move forward with at that juncture.
So I'm going to... So, in the design plan, do we have an estimate? Because there's lots of different ways you could design a building and lots of things you could bring into it depending on the design of the building. Mm-hmm. So, do we have a cost estimate of return? Is there any way we're going to get cost estimate of return of the amount of money if you build it they will come?
Yes.
And how much money they can return?
That's part of the initial planning. That you've got to have that in your operational plan. Your business plan has to project what is it you're going to actually get out of this. So we'll probably be working off of a agreed upon general size of this particular building, and then based on the size, you can talk about what kinds of activities might you encourage in that facility. What would they generate in terms of revenue? That kind of stuff. That'll be incorporated into the plan.
Because a lot of times people want something they can't afford.
I think that's a very, very valid statement. We're trying to look at this. We're really trying to integrate. I mean, this is a little bit unusual in some ways. We're integrating the facilities plan. You can build anything. I mean, I've always said that I can build you anything if you want to get out there and build it. Operating is the much more difficult process, and this is an integrated attempt to approach both those. So you've got a clear feeling and a clear plan for what you're going to build and how it's going to operate, right, and what that includes the returns you're going to get.
Right, and returns so that you don't get big loss in an area. So this is all going to be in the plan.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, I wanted to make sure that...
Absolutely, that's part of the scope of the work that we asked for.
Okay, that's what I remembered I asked. But
yes. And I did include, for just reference purposes and information, the actual... new exhibit hall and ancillary facilities, what the scope of that work would be that gets us to having a structure actually built. Again, that'll be a separate agreement. We have there's some very detailed information we've got to do related to architectural engineer agreements, when you're building an actual project. And so this will serve as the guideline to getting us there. It gives us a scope of what the costs are going to be, but we'll have a separate agreement that meets those particular requirements when that time comes.
Mr. Chair, if I could, as the commissioner who served on the Fair Board since 2009, I would say the concerns that you have brought up have been foremost in our discussions of this throughout the time we've been talking about it. And just my observation, having reviewed this contractual agreement when we got our meeting packets, I'm very pleased with it. I mean, I think the fact, we've already had three rounds of public input, 2007 with the Blue Ribbon Fair Committee, our consultants in 2010 and 2014, and that's really kind of narrowed the scope of the work and the questions to be resolved considerably, but now it's translating general concepts into specific details, so I'm glad there's going to be one more robust opportunity for the public to weigh in on that, but get us a plan where we can make some decisions, hopefully award some contracts for design, construction, and get it going sooner rather than later now.
If I might, and kind of the ancillary stuff is really what was missing at this point. We've got this framework of a plan out there, but as you look at that site and you think about that site too, and for those of us who have assisted the Fair Board over the years, we've had ongoing issues with water, sewer, storm drainage. Harney Street, is going to be the main arterial that leads in from Highway 20 coming into there. We're going to have to look at the scope of what this kind of development does to that. That's where we get city participation too, in doing that. So a lot of that stuff is going to be scoped out in this process too, and we're going to have a full feel for what it takes to actually redevelop the property out there and what that means.
Okay. So do we move this to decision and action next week, or if we're ready?
If you're ready to do that, that's fine.
I'd like to.
I might make note, I think, as Council Belmont mentioned, and I've stated in the past, I think it's incredibly important that we make sure the city of Newport's involved, too.
Well, all the cities, actually, because this is a county common. So, but the Newport, because they have a financial interest in this,
and
in terms
it's
of
located control, in
and it's located.
But it is property we hold in trust for the whole county.
For the entire county. And I would want to note here, there's a couple things that we should note. We are going to have some committees and stakeholder groups that are going to be both identified and contacted to participate in the public outreach process. So to the extent Steve's here, and anybody else in the media or wants to be involved in this, there's going to be great opportunities to do so, to weigh in on this and to give us your feedback on this. And we'll have a lot more information, a pretty detailed outreach plan that will work with local media and other forms of reaching out to people. That'll be coming up in the next few months. So,
okay, very good. Forward. Moving forward.
Okay, we jump down to reports, and we have a status report for Lincoln County Community Wildfire Protection Plan.
Good morning, Commissioners. I'm Joshua Shackley. I'm Senior Planner with the Planning and Development Department here at the county. And our two departments, this is Jenny Damaris with the Manager of the Emergency Management Department here at the county. Our two offices have been working on a couple that we wanted to bring to your attention, update you on, and make you aware of a couple opportunities for the board, if they choose, and the public to weigh in on a couple projects, ongoing projects. The first of which is the Community Wildfire Protection Plan. The original, we're in the process of updating the original CWPP, which was completed in 2010. The original was developed with the assistance of a consultant, Northwest, blanking on the, Northwest Management Incorporated, back in 2010. And it was designed to be updated every 5 years and reviewed annually. So if you do the math, we're a little behind schedule on that. So since mid-February, we've been meeting twice a month. We've assembled a planning committee with representatives of Oregon Department of Forestry, our two departments, the Lincoln County Fire Defense Board, State Fire Marshal's Office, and with input from local fire districts and departments. Again, we've been meeting on the first and third Thursdays of each month since February, and with the goal of having the updated plan before the board for adoption in June. So we've also initiated a public outreach process, the main piece of which is coming up this Saturday, actually, at the fairgrounds or the commons. So that's May 6th, the community room at the the Lincoln County Fairgrounds, and representatives of the Department of Forestry will be there to make a presentation. Jenny will be making a presentation as well, and we've provided some materials on the planning and development website for other opportunities to provide comment for the public. So the draft, we have a draft available for review by the public on the website, and there's also a link to a survey that public members of the public can take to provide input into the plan. And we are soliciting that input up through May 15th. So again, we're hoping to have a draft ready for review by the board by early June, and hope to have you adopt it later in that month. The second opportunity for public input is in regards to the risk map project, which has been ongoing, actually was initiated back in 2009. And through a number of fits and starts, we're finally to the point where we have some products for the public to review and comment on. So the opportunity for that public comment is at the Oregon Coast Community College community room. This is Thursday evening, May 18th. Representatives of FEMA, our two departments, and the cities, incorporated cities in Lincoln County, and the Sleds Tribe will be in attendance to answer questions on how. So FEMA, through a lengthy review process, FEMA has produced some preliminary maps, flood maps, based on some newer technology, LIDAR, in particular areas of the county. And so property owners in the county are going to potentially see some changes in how the flood, special flood hazard areas affect their properties and their structures. And so this open house on the 18th is an opportunity for folks from the community to come and see how these new maps affect their properties in particular, and learn from the different jurisdictions what regulations and restrictions are in place based on that.
Joshua, just maybe a note for that one. Will you have available, an individual property owner can come in and see either a hard copy of a map or that computer simulation, something that they could actually look at that his or her individual property and see where the map changes?
Yes, we'll have a table set up with a computer where property owners can come and identify their property and print out the actual preliminary maps.
We also
have those available in our office now. If members of the public are interested, they can contact us and we can create those maps using our geographic information system.
Great. Thanks.
So I would just add on that Community Wildland Fire Protection Plan. So part of the reason why we chose this coming Saturday, it is Loyalty Days weekend here in Newport, and we tried to find an opportunity where maybe perhaps people might already be coming to town. We're also going to be doing a Cascadia presentation that morning from 8:30 to 10. So perhaps a way to—we find a lot more people come in for the Cascadia presentation, so we're kind of double-dipping. So hopefully they'll come in for the Cascadia presentation, and they'll stay for the Community Wildland Fire Protection Plan. Saturday is also the National Community Wildfire Protection Day, if you will, so there was another promotion. And I think the opportunity for this, for those folks that live in our city jurisdictions, this also affects them. Our trees and our forests come right down into our cities. Everyone in Lincoln County has a certain threat of wildland fire, even though we have a surge of rain and moisture this year, which we're very thankful for. But in those off years, when we find ourselves in an extreme drought condition, what property owners can do for their own homes to prevent the threat of wildland fire or reduce their fuel reductions around their property, so the fire does initiate and come through their property, they may be less likely to have a full destruction of their home. So not just looking at the plan itself, but this is an opportunity to get those community members in to see and hear best practices. We have a group, the South Shan Neighborhood Association group. Oregon Department of Forestry has been working with them over this past year. They are now referred to as a FireWise neighborhood group. We've tried another group in your county over in the Harlan area. It hasn't taken much interest. So if you're listening from Harlan, we'd really love to get you motivated. So there's other opportunities that we can increase that knowledge and understanding, and grants are available to these neighborhoods if they're interested. Oregon Department of Forestry, great group of people. They're going to come in June and give you their annual report as we tie in this plan review. So you'll get to hear about the things and opportunities that are there for our community members. And I think with the flood part, to re-emphasize to property owners, if you can't make it to that open house, you can contact Joshua afterwards. The important piece here is if you are in the floodplain currently or will be moved into the floodplain, it is absolutely imperative that you research the National Flood Insurance Program. Talk with your local insurance agent. If they're not familiar with the National Flood Insurance Program, you can do research on your own. You can contact our office with emergency management, or you can contact another insurance agency who is more familiar. But in order to receive financial reimbursement for damages or structure impact after a flood, you have to have the National Flood Insurance Program on board, or you will not receive compensation for your damages. And one last shout out for National Flood Insurance Program. If you reside in the tsunami inundation area, I strongly encourage you to get National Flood Insurance, as that will be the only way that your property is protected after an earthquake and or a distant or local tsunami. Those will be your only avenues for financial recovery.
I'll make a comment on that. As a former banker, anytime there was a loan that involved residential property, it was a requirement to have the flood insurance to get the loan. Okay. That's really driven at the federal level. The other thing, I guess I dovetail on the conversation or the comments about the wildland fire. Correct me if I'm wrong, but as part of our preparation for the solar eclipse, we're planning three, you are planning three exercises, one of which is a wildland fire exercise.
So,
and two more, you might talk about that.
You bet. I am very proud to say that our fire districts and our public safety agencies, this will be the third year in a row that we now have an annual wildland fire seasonal weather briefing. The National Weather Service is going to do a specific webinar for us. And then directly following that, we will do a tabletop scenario exercise for wildland fire. And this year, as you mentioned, getting ready for the eclipse, the three exercises that we have planned between now and August will all be based or simulated during the eclipse weekend. So our scenario will be very similar to the 2500 road fire that we had last year in Depot Bay. You might remember that initiated leave on August 20th, and the eclipse is August 21st. So we can have a wildland fire in August here in Lincoln County. So we'll have our public safety partners there for that wildland fire exercise May 27th. We have also invited all of our adjacent counties, sheriff's office, and fire districts, because this scenario, we're going to ramp it up a bit. We will have the fire initiate once again east of Depot Bay, change the conditions a little bit, which will make it much more severe. Will require a simulated evacuation, you know, in paper, on paper. And then we're going to have a secondary fire somewhere on one of our jurisdictional lines. So there'll be two active wildland fires during that that scenario. And then in July, moving forward, we were successful in securing a Oregon State Fire Marshal's Hazardous Material Grant last year to have a tabletop exercise. You were required to have it be an industrial exercise, a hazmat industrial, so traffic. And so what we've decided to do is combine that once again with getting ready for the eclipse. So we will base a scenario somewhere in one of our city jurisdictions, hazardous material, transportation accident. It will also be staged during the eclipse time period. Probably really going to do that on a Monday, worst case scenario. Multi-vehicle crash, critical injuries, possible Chempac activation, acknowledging how much longer it will stay, it will take your state hazmat teams to get here for those scenarios, because one comes from Salem, one comes from Corvallis. Normally we're looking at a 90-minute window, and in this case we're probably looking at 2 to 3 hours before they arrive. So it forces your public safety agencies to be much more diligent on their stabilization of that scene. We're going to have a minimal evacuation shelter in place around this accident scene in a city jurisdiction. So that will very much test and challenge our healthcare industry EMS partners, on-scene hazardous material on command, as well as our state hazmat team, and then also the Oregon Health Authority. We're working with them about our Chempac utilization and how we activate that, especially under those strained circumstances. And then, wait, there's more! So, threw in at the last minute, one of my biggest concerns is a distant tsunami here in Lincoln County. And so we will be doing a run-through of our distant tsunami protocols on August 10th. We quarterly participate with the state on their quarterly exercises, so I chose to change the scenario just for us. And so we'll be doing about a 2 to 3 hour teleconference run-through, if you will, from all of our home agencies on a distant tsunami that would be staged sometime during that eclipse weekend. So before we get to the eclipse, your public safety partners will have run through the top 5 probability events that could occur here, and that will make us more resilient, and our contingency plans will be talked through and ready to go before the visitors arrive for the eclipse.
Thank you. Good information.
Okay. Anything else?
No. Appreciate the presentation.
Okay.
Thank you.
And we move down to commissioners' reports.
One thing I'll mention is last week I joined a couple of senior staff of AOC, Association of Oregon Counties, in a meeting with Senator Richard Devlin, the co-chair of Ways and Means in the legislature. I'll be going back this afternoon. We'll be meeting with the other co-chair, Representative Nancy Nathanson. But we heard a moderately optimistic message that whether the legislature manages to agree on any significant new revenue package or not, county services should not be significantly impacted by the state budget. They said, you know, looking up the food chain, unfortunately, the federal budget, if any significant cuts materialize there that affect local services, their ability to backfill at the state level to help us out is going to be small to non-existent. So I'll keep you posted as I learn more.
I'm going to pass.
Okay, I'll just mention that we had the phone call with Kirk Schrader. Yep. It was very productive at Kirk. Fact that he liked the format and was interested in another one in the future.
Great.
He did mention one thing since you weren't there, Bill, and that was...
Because that was with reference to Senator Devlin.
Right, you were with Devlin, and we were... But he mentioned that he felt that for the low-income housing issue, mm-hmm. he felt there was support in Washington, D.C. to look at veterans housing as being a specific area that he thought might pass with a nonpartisan.
That's really good to hear, because in the last administration, homelessness among veterans was cut in half, primarily through supportive services and a housing voucher program, but in places like Lincoln County and a lot of other places where rental housing is very hard to come by, we also need to get some construction going, and if that's the kind of thing Congress would support, I will work with my networks and see if we can get something going.
Okay.
I might also mention, Commissioner Thompson, you indicated that there might be an opportunity to have similar teleconferences with our senators, which certainly I think could be beneficial.
It's always, public meetings are fine, but a lot of times in a government-to-government relationship, you need to be able to dwell a little deeper than you can in a public meeting, question and answer. So. I was happy with the results.
Mm-hmm.
It was good. Hope you'll be able to participate if we get the next one.
Okay.
Okay, we move down to executive session. Constituent input. And it's constituent input is limited to 5 minutes and can be addressed to the commission on any subject. Is there anybody like to?
I would.
Sure. Be sure and sign in when you get a chance. Oh, you don't need to do it right now.
But. Okay.
My name is Carla Perry, and I just have two questions based on the conversations and the reports I heard this morning. One was regarding input for the commons, the fairground space, and I know during past inputs from the community members that there had been some requests to address affordable housing at that site, and I just wondered if that is part of the RFP you received back, or was that part of the requirements in the RFP?
No, that's not. You know, obviously the utilization of the grounds, that's been a major topic of discussion, you know, for a long time. This focuses on, you know, the fact that they were provided to the county as fairgrounds. So it's tied into the requirements under ORS Chapter 535 for those kinds of events, kinds of related things. So it's still looking at redevelopment of the grounds for purposes of you know, activities that would relate to those which are authorized under law.
So all of the property would be considered.
At this point, that the footprint of what exists there is being looked at. Yes.
Okay, even though there was public input to use part of that property for housing.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
Short answer is yes.
Yes. Okay. The second part was in the development and the construction. I just wondered if the county was interested in participating in the percent for the arts. The city has a resolution, and so any new construction by the city allows for 1% for the arts. And I wondered if the county was interested in adopting something like that, and it sounds like with a new construction it'll be several million dollars.
Yes.
And so that I was just wondering if there would be a percent for the arts
component.
I think there's a couple of things. There actually, we have to look at some energy efficiency stuff. It's a dollar amount. We'll have to do some things related to energy efficiency. Arts is another thing we could consider as part of that. I don't know enough about if the city requirement is for all building.
All,
I don't know if it's just city buildings.
It they can only enforce it for city buildings.
Is that what the way it is? I haven't really looked at that.
But they encourage private development that allows public access, like stores, housing units, where there's public coming in and out, that they are also encouraged to participate in the percent for the arts. I think the county might need to adopt something ahead of time so that it just becomes part of the process if there's any new building, any new construction for any reason.
Because we're also going to be doing the health and human services.
We've got some other projects, that are doing that. I mean, that's
a consideration. Let's look into that, please, Mr. Belmont, if we could.
Okay.
Hear back. And looking at it, I'd like to see what the laws are and what...
Mm-hmm. I'll report back. That's in
the discussion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Finally, actually.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Pressures on the other input.
Is there anybody else who'd like to testify? Seeing none, we'll move down to... we have an executive session?
We have a very quick one.
Okay, executive session. So we will adjourn to the executive session and then adjourn after that. And this is to discuss litigation.
Okay.
So we're not going back.
No. Correct.
You want to write that?